Welcome to Tom Rhodes Radio. Thank you for listening. Hey, I want to start off today by giving some shout-outs to some Rhodesies that I came into contact with in the last week. Number one, John in Boise, Idaho. Shalom from Boise indeed. Hey man, I appreciate the message you sent me about those Netflix comments. And you're right, fuck those people. Alex in Toronto. Dude, oh, that's someplace I wish I could get back to very soon. So great to know that I got somebody listening in Toronto. Thanks for your message, brother. Andrew in Sydney, Australia. Oh my God, that's another place I wish I could get back to very soon. Andrew is listening to Tom Rhodes Radio when he commutes to work in Sydney, Australia every day. It's keeping him laughing and keeping him enlightened. Andrew, I'm so glad to know you're on the other side of the planet listening to my little program. Brian and Ty in Minneapolis, Minnesota. I just met these guys. I was in Minneapolis at Acme Comedy Club last week, and the late show Friday night, I met these two guys. Well, during the show, one of them was yelling out for me to do the Jack and Coke Jerry Lewis joke, which is a really old, twisted, fucked up joke of mine that I did a long time ago. And I met these guys after the show. They knew everything about my career. They knew the Comedy Central interstitial bits I did. They knew the Viva Vietnam bits. They knew Mr. Rhodes. They knew everything I've ever done. And I wish that I had a tour bus to travel around the country with fans like these that I could just hang out with and laugh. And these guys, I love you to death, Brian and Ty. Thanks for coming to see me. You're beautiful Rhodesies. Thanks for coming to see me every time I play in Minneapolis. Okay, let's get on with today's program. Today's show was recorded in London, England. And my guest is Joseph Wilson. I met Joseph in 2013 when I performed at the Comedy Cafe in London. And that was interesting. That was the first show that I did where there was a lot of Tom Rhodes Radio listeners. And I was pleasantly surprised. And I met Joseph. It was interesting. He told me he became a listener after he met me. About 6 months later, he was on vacation in Peru. And he recorded a video at the top of Machu Picchu where he was kind of slightly mocking my intro for my podcast where I tell the listener, we're going to go to China. We're going to go to Machu Picchu. And I thought it was really funny. And I was very flattered that he did this video for me from Peru. So we hung out a lot this visit to London. He came to my shows at the Soho Theater. We became really good friends. He introduced me to Natalia Tena, who's in the band Molotov Jukebox with his brother, Tom Wilson. Anyway, Joseph Wilson is a great guy. I loved hanging out with him. Even though I stopped drinking, he took me to all these cool new watering holes in the Soho district of London. Garlic and Shots, really cool place, I highly recommend. He's well-dressed, he's an animated storyteller, he's an impressionist by trade. And, you know, I have to say, any man who wears high-quality embroidered cowboy shirts around London is, he's a diamond geezer in my book, that's for sure. I love him to death. He became a really good friend of mine this visit. And it's my pleasure to present to you now the one and only Joseph Wilson. Joseph motherfucking Wilson. How's that? You like the new opening?
That's pretty good. I prefer it from your theme song. The theme tune before your podcast. That is better.
You like my theme song?
You should always have that. Before.
But you mocked my theme song when you were in Peru. You made the little video, put it on YouTube.
Yeah, well, basically how that sort of happened, right, was, as I said, I met you, because I listen to, like, massive geek about comedy. So I listen to podcasts all the time. On the trains and going to some bumfuck shy gig in the middle of who the fuck gives a shit, right? So I'm there and I'm always listening to these American podcasts, and all you always hear, Tom Rhodes. Some like an offshoot, oh, Tom Rhodes. And so I was like, who is this geezer, right? And at the CAF, I saw you down there because I'm in with the Comedy Cafe. And he's like,
it was January 2013, the last time I was here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I was like, right, he's down there. And out of annoyance, I came to see you. not as like a fan or, oh, I wonder who this guy is. Just like, who is this prick? Right? Which I think is not bad strategy for advertising. And I saw you, I was like, oh, wow, you fucking fell in love. Well, great, Jesus, right? Since then, I started listening to your podcast. Got into it, like, oh, that's very good, very interesting. And then because of your theme song, the theme tune, I did that at Machu Picchu. Because of the theme tune, it has Machu Picchu.
And I'll take you to Machu Picchu, and I'll take you to the Great Wall of China. That's great, man. That's I was flattered that you did that.
I'm so happy you're flattered, because I was thinking, I just met this guy, had like a beer with him after, like with Noel Faulkner, who's the owner, and just, and then suddenly I thought, you might be offended. Like, I'm taking the piss. Like, who is this?
I thought it was hilarious, and it was great to see Machu Picchu again. And the fact that you filmed it at Machu Picchu.
I planned that for 6 months. I literally planned that for 6 months. You have no idea.
To make that video when
literally
you were there.
Literally to make that video. That was my whole... Because on my way to Machu Picchu...
So you're on the hike up in the Andes, and you're going over the lines to my theme song.
Dude, can I say something, right? This is absolutely true, right? Because I'd planned this for 6 months, because you have to book it, the hike to Machu Picchu. It's a 3-day, 4-day. You sleep in camps, and you're in the middle of the jungle. You're not, like, on a path. You're up boulders, and then you go over the gringo killer, as they call it. It's a huge...
Well, it is, like, it is a path. It's the Inca Highway is what it was called.
Yeah, but it's
been
not,
there for thousands of years.
It's not like a path. It's like a not an easy path. It's a... You did it, right?
Yeah, it's not like it's a state park thing.
No,
that,
it's a
yeah,
fucking,
no, it's,
you're
there's
hiking.
Thin parts. There's like cliff edges.
You're hiking. You know what I mean? You're doing it. And it's, you've got your whole case, and then you've got the guide, and then you're literally in the middle of nowhere, and it's amazing. The views are incredible. So, point is, on my way there, during it, I had food poisoning because I ate something in Cusco, the city, which is next to Machu Picchu.
Right? Yeah.
So it was nothing to do with the food on the tour, which was amazing. However, so I got crazy ill because I had some bad chicken or something. So I was doing the trek 3-4 day, right, at 4,000 something feet. And I live in London, so, you know, that's at more or less sea level-ish. And so I'm doing it, and I was violently ill. And you're also suffering from altitude sickness.
Yeah.
So I had everything going on. Plus, I've got a massive, you know, like, backpack. I'm hiking in the middle. So I was ill. I've never been that ill. And normally when you're ill, you're like, fuck this, go to bed, you know, leave me alone. But there's an amazing thing doing that. You're in the middle of this jungle and you're like, I've got two options. Either I keep going or I stay here and die. It was the first time coming from London. You know, I have so many options here. I think in our Western bullshit bubble, we have so many options. I was there in the middle of...
Death isn't a persistent constant.
No, and that was the first time I experienced that. And going back to the point, I was like, someone said halfway, like, I was so ill. They're like, do you want to go back? I was like, no. A, I want to trek to Machu Picchu. I've been waiting 6 months to do this. And I did it. And also, I had you in mind going, I've got to do this fucking video.
That's great.
So this is why I was always thinking about you.
Peru is my favorite trip I've ever taken.
Taking a dump on a tree. Like, I'm taking a dump!
You're having diarrhea attacks. Your abdomen's all clenched up and you're thinking, I got to keep climbing so I can record this.
I got to do this for this guy.
I did that trek on, I did one season on this program for Holland, Dutch television, You're in Travel, and I got to go to Peru. And
they filmed you do the trek?
Yeah, and we did it.
I got to check that out.
It was on YouTube, but they took it down, thanks YouTube, because I didn't own the rights.
I love you, YouTube.
We did the 2-day hike, and I don't hate camping, absolutely hate camping, but I thought, okay, I'll camp out in a tent to climb to Machu Picchu. And then they hired these Peruvian kids who like carried
oh my God,
all this
that's
like,
crazy.
The for like $1 a day or something. And they carried like our film equipment, our luggage. One guy is carrying my luggage. My suitcase has been to the top of Machu Picchu. On the top of some Peruvian kid's back, you know? And the guy like it was nothing.
But that's it. I was so amazed as I'm going through, I'm so ill, puking like shit, like everything, altitude sickness, oh it's just terrible going up mountains. Oh my God. And then you see these little Peruvians, just they're like farmers, so they need to do this. This is a necessity for them to survive. And you, as you experience, they've got massive backpacks, equipment they're taking. And they're like 5-foot, like hobbit, these guys.
Yeah.
And you just, as you're going along, I was sick as a dog, and these people just fly up.
Yeah.
And they're like massive steps they're taking, and they're literally running. And apparently from the... 82nd kilometre mark, I think it's 83, which is a quite a significant part of the journey. There was actually a world record. One of these fuckers from the farms, these guys, normally that's, you get there on the last, the first day, the second, 83rd kilometre, something. Anyway, this guy, in 3 hours 45 minutes, ran without equipment from the 83rd kilometre mark to fucking Machu Picchu.
And somebody timed it.
Yeah, that takes, it's a competition they do, that takes 2 days, 3 days to hike. He did that in 3 hours and 45 minutes, and then fucking died soon afterwards.
Well, you know, we look at them as Westerners and think, oh, those poor people only getting $1 a day, but they're probably the richest guys in that area. What other industry is there? I mean, there's tourism, people going to Machu Picchu, and that's it. But these guys were such great guides, and they know the place. I mean, and they cooked us food. Whatever we paid them was the best money, and it was great.
It's actually really good.
And they knew, oh, that's what I was going to say. We were on the 2-day hike. You can smell the people who are on the 4-day hike before they get to you. People really? On the 4-day hike, Jesus, and people stop and talk to you. I mean, we must have stunk, too, like 2 days without a shower. But, like, the 4-day hike people really have a pungent funk coming off them. But these guys knew, we entered at the cloud gate.
Yes.
We camped out overnight on the second night, and we're there at sunrise. There's this one entrance to Machu Picchu from this...
The sun gate.
Okay, yeah. That's the one.
The
sun gate. And then the sun comes out. We're above the clouds. And there's clouds over Machu Picchu. And then, and they keep going, wait, wait, wait. And then it looked like a curtain opening on a theater. The clouds burned off. And then there's Machu Picchu revealed, and it was right there.
It just blows your tits off.
And it's like almost like Wizard of Oz. You just want to start running for the Emerald City.
Because you could see it, and the sun gate, you're above, so you're looking down.
Yeah.
And you're just there, and you just see this vast... You're in the middle of nowhere, and it's like... And you see it, you're like, how can the... You know, you trek for a few days, you're like, oh, that's it. And you try and comprehend what you're looking at, and you're like, fuck, that's it. That's... And it's... Oh, it's just something to see in your life.
It's great. I would love to go back. That was, a childhood dream to go there.
Really? Why do you have an interest?
I mean, I've always been fascinated with ancient cultures.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, the thing that blew me away when I was a kid that I read about was the Nazca Lines. There was this...
In Peru.
Leonard Nimoy hosted this show, Mysteries of the World or something. Somebody listening to this is going, you idiot, it's called such and such. They had a story on the Nazca Lines. Now they thought it was alien landing strips, or that the aliens had made it. And... So we went there, and then we rented the planes over, and you fly over.
I never did that.
We went to Nazca, and it's only like $100 each.
Yeah.
But these planes are these little propeller planes, and they're small. And there's like 20, 30 of them circling around above the Nazca lines, and it's dangerous.
Apparently.
Because I mean, they're not communicating on radios. No. These guys are just like, you know, old pointing school. Old school. And I think it was like 2 years ago, some Chinese tourists got killed. There was a collision. And they died. But I thought, fuck it, if I die doing this, what a cool way to die.
Was it good? Because I missed that. Because a lot of people going, yeah, it's all right.
Oh, I loved it.
Really?
I loved it.
People think, apparently, the experience isn't so great because you're just in some...
Well, you're afraid. You're in this plane, and then, like, the wind will make it dip. I don't know if you've ever been in, like, a big Zeppelin, like the Goodyear blimp. I was in one of those once, and, like, the wind is...
Yeah.
And helicopters are the same. And those little planes, too, are the wind can blow it.
Mm.
And then you get drops and shit, and your guts are falling out. But it was fantastic. And after seeing it from above, it was clearly alien landing strips.
Of course.
Totally.
Only in America could say something like that.
Yeah, it was totally.
South America, I didn't know much about it. And I went to South America for a few reasons, personal reasons. And it was just amazing. That place is so... Because not many people know about it. And there's a Peru, it was just, you could do so much. And it's a Bolivia, Peru, Ecuador, and Colombia. And I took time off from stand-up. Because I've been doing it for like 8.5 years or whatever, since I was like 18, right? So a kid. And I think I was just a bit broken. I was just like, oh,
you would do an epic trip.
I was just, And I was just like, I'll just do this because I just need to. And, you know, sometimes you kind of need to unplug from the system and just like chill the fuck out or whatever.
It's good to get a different perspective.
Absolutely, and I come back.
Especially you go to like a beautiful third world country. And you see people who are just like happy and
it's amazing.
They have nothing.
And coming from London, like
by
in
our
Europe,
standards.
You don't, exactly, by our standards, I didn't know much about this and I want to experience this. And it's just great. And I just went all the way to like Colombia as well. And they're really like, I don't want to sound all wanky and like, oh, hey, I've been on a trip, mate.
Well, let's go before we get to Colombia. What was your favorite thing about Peru? What were some of your favorite moments?
Going to Arequipa. Arequipa is the white city. It's like 10 hours south of Cusco, and it's a white marble city. It's called the white city because it's white marble, white just buildings and stone. It just was just gorgeous.
And it's like kind of right under this massive mountain.
Yeah. Oh yeah. The Colca Canyon, and they've got the Misty Mountain. They've got a few volcanoes. It's just incredible. And I went there to learn Spanish as well, because I've always wanted to learn Spanish since I was a kid. And now that is so great that I can conversationally speak Spanish. And it's so great that I'm using my mind for different, you know, you just, when you speak another language, you could just use your mind. You're speaking to other people. And Spanish is like a world language.
Right.
You know, and they say that in America, in the next, 30 years, 50 years, everyone will be Spanish. You know, that Hispanic, all that, those neo-white people.
But they're out fucking the rest of us. Yeah.
The Hispanics.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, America will be South America.
You know, white people just won't play video games and watch movies on Netflix and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, they're still in touch with the original form of entertainment.
But all those white people that you're having a go at, you want to get them to watch your
I'm ashamed that
Netflix,
I don't.
Right?
You know, my mother's from Argentina.
I
got the Rosetta Stone. I've been there 3 times.
It's great. Well, you got the South American thing, man. And your wife, she's
you think
South
my,
American.
It's
great. It's so good. I'm so
what did
jealous
you call me?
You
chisel jaw? What did you call jawline? You keep calling me jawline.
The prick's got a jawline, even at fucking 45. How many? Because I don't have one. I just got this round, just Jew, Russian, Polish brick in my head.
You should have saw my jawline when I was 20.
Exactly.
I could cut bread with it.
Don't worry,
then.
I would have hated you even more. Don't worry, mate. But what's the best thing? I mean, Peru, I mean, it was just great just going around. Because not many people know about it. You know, Peru, what's Peru? Like, I didn't know anything about Peru. Such a banging place. And, you know, on the way, you pick up material. And now I'm starting doing material. Because I got a bit stale, like, in you know, as you do, after a while, you're like, what am I doing? This is... Yeah. And now I'm sort of working on South American stuff. And it's like what you're saying when you say, I recently went to so-and-so, like Asia or Australia, wherever you've been. People go, all right, okay. And it gives you a different view on things. And I think audience is like, oh, that's quite interesting. Because, you know, how many people are doing stuff on...
Right. A lot of countries? My act is that. I was just here. I was in this country. I was
in
this country.
And people are going to listen. People go, oh, that's quite interesting.
Like sometimes in the States, some people go, like, if you feel like they think, oh, you're bragging or something. But... I think it's part of my identity. I want to tell you my greatest experience in Peru.
Yes.
We went to Puno.
Yes.
Which is on Lake Titicaca.
Yes.
And on the edge of the shore of Lake Titicaca mm-hmm. is a statue of Beavis and Butthead laughing.
Really?
I'm kidding. Lake Titicaca.
Oh, fuck.
Only an immature...
TP for my bumhole.
Exactly. So we take this boat, like...
Jeez, how fuck is young and stupid? Really? No, you fuck. You fucking British fuck.
We took this boat, like, 3 hours out into Lake Titicaca, which was stunning.
Yeah?
So beautiful. And just islands with terrace farming. The aliens had to have helped them carve these things out
of course.
Mountainsides.
Of course, Mr. America.
So we go to this island, and it's only costs, like, $3 or $4 a day.
Yeah.
It was Amentani Island.
Okay.
It's called Amentani Island. You stay with a native family,
yeah.
like the Indians.
Mm.
And these are the ancestors of the Incas. These are the descendants of the Inca people. And they have no electricity. They're living like they were. They told us to bring fruit from the docks. They had little markets in Puno
really?
Because they didn't have fruit there. So we brought this fruit. And this woman, the mother... greets us at the dock when our boat gets there. And I had a bag of oranges.
Yeah.
And this woman, it was like, you know, Hello, hey, hello, hello, hello. Like, fuck the introductions. This woman went straight for that bag of oranges.
Yeah.
And she ripped it open and she grabbed this. She took this orange, and the way she ate this orange, it was like it was just like the greatest piece of candy. Just, you know, nature's candy. She's, and the
she
way
must
she.
Be good going
every
down
fucking drop just. The way she enjoyed that orange.
I'm gonna meet her.
I want to live my life the way that woman enjoyed that orange. I want to enjoy my life, every drop of it. So they cooked us a dinner, and I'm in this woman's kitchen. You know, we're filming this. And they had a dirt floor, kitchen floor, and there's chicken shells and chicken shits and chickens walking around. And my southern politeness, I thought, I'm going to eat whatever this woman puts in front of me. No matter what it is, just out of politeness. And I don't, if I get sick, I get sick. So I ate it. I ended up not getting sick. The funny story is, on the way home, our plane stopped in Atlanta.
Yeah.
And my Dutch, to go back to Amsterdam, my Dutch film crew wanted to go to an American mall. And I know Atlanta very well. The big fancy mall. There's the Lenox Mall. So we took a taxi, took taxis to the Lenox Mall. And I had a sandwich that had undercooked bacon in it.
Right.
And I got sick. And the plane ride from Atlanta to Amsterdam, I was shitting and vomiting. It was the worst plane ride ever. I was in the bathroom the whole time. Yeah. I just could not stop shitting. And it was from this fancy, exclusive, rich people mall in Atlanta that I got sick. Not this woman's kitchen in Peru. So anyway, they did this ceremony. Like, you always hear about Native Americans and African tribes, if you take their photo, it's taking their soul. We've all heard that. Fuck that. These people were like, oh yeah, sorry you're not here when we're doing our sacred ceremony to Mother Earth, which is Pachamama.
Pachamama, yeah.
The whole village came out and did it so we would film it. And so they take these coca leaves. Everyone gets a coca leaf. They pass this burlap bag around. The guy, the shaman, dances. He does this thing. He doesn't dance, but he does this. He blesses everything with this burning smoke and this burning stick. And then he lights the pile of cow shit on fire, and that's burning. And then everybody takes the leaf and says a prayer and puts it in the bag. And then it comes back to the guy in the circle, and he says some prayer. And then he puts the bag on the cow shit, and it burns. And it sounds strange, but it was so beautiful. And the Dutch sound man standing there with his pole and the big fuzzy microphone, and he's got tears running down his face.
Really?
And I was there. I was like, if I ever complain about anything ever again in the first world, I hope someone slaps
me. Well, it's a great leveler. You know, I hadn't experienced that, and I needed to go away to experience that kind of like, fuck me, kind of moments. And, you know, as you just say, you just experience such amazing, like, things, you know. But I was going to say that I went to Puno, which is on the town of Lake Titicaca as you go into Peru from, like, Bolivia. I came from Bolivia. And they got
boat, cool.
No, by coach.
Okay.
But because there's Bolivia and Peru, half of it is Peru, half of it is Bolivia. They're still arguing over whose right is to have the whole thing, blah, 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 right? But I went to Puno to go to where you went, and apparently people going, oh, it's rubbish. It's literally just going to, it's a tourist trap, they said. Tourist trap, tourist trap. The people don't care. They, you know, the people that live on these man-made floating islands, it's just that they don't care. They're like, yeah, whatever, gringo. So that's why I didn't go. But I did go to the Bolivian side.
We stopped. We went onto those floating islands. They're no big deal.
Yeah, everyone said
that's
that.
No
that's
big
why
deal.
I didn't go.
And the people there are there kind of, they, and you stop, and it's like, they're like, okay, buy something, gringo.
Yeah, fuck
and we
that.
Stopped, and I jumped off, and it's all mushy, because it's like made out of like reeds all tied together and stuff. And that you can skip.
Yeah.
The floating islands, skip that. But go stay with the native family. So we took the train ride from Puno to Cuzco.
Yes.
And because we were filming, we did the first half of the journey in backpacker class, which is only like $10, $15.
Nothing.
And then it's all these European, American, Canadian backpackers all crammed in there. And then the second, and then it stops halfway through. And these people come out from this village halfway through, and they got crafts. But they're nice stuff that you would want to buy. And like llama, you know, fur, wool things, and that they're selling caps and whatnot. And then we took the Inca class from the for the second half of the journey to Cuzco, and that's the first class. That's like the last three cars of the train or two cars, and it's all these big leather armchairs. And there's a bar on the back car, and the back of the very last train, the caboose, is a bar car, and there's a brass railing, and you're outside. So you're standing there, you got your cocktail, and you're just, the tracks are behind you, and you're going through the
amazing
Andes,
mountains,
and there's like herds of llama.
Oh, yes.
That,
so good.
That was one of the greatest things I've ever done in my life.
It's amazing. I mean, that moment when I was on the train from Machu Picchu, going to Cusco, which is the city next to it. So you're on this really quite a pimp train. It's all very nice. And then suddenly, on this garage, suddenly there's music blurring out, like Peruvian music. So I was like, oh, right. Well, what's happening here? Are we stopping? Are we arriving? Well, what are you doing? This guy in a dance mask, like an indigenous like mask, and like a tasseled kind of green and orange, comes out going, all the way down the carriage, and with some shaky stick, everyone's going, what the fuck is going on here? He's going, and he's like, takes people, starts dancing with people, and I'm sat there, everyone's just kind of getting swept up in this madness, going, fuck me, Al-Qaeda have branched out here. This shit is such
now,
a
see,
great...
That would be genius if Al-Qaeda dressed up as, like, native...
Such an amazing distraction, because people were like, yes, clapping along, right, and this is great. But that was all a ploy. It's like, who the fuck is this guy, right? He's a ploy, because then afterwards, like 5 minutes after, they were selling, like, llama, alpaca wool.
Yeah.
And they're actually doing a show in each carriage. They're doing like a model show. I thought, that's amazing. This fucking guy, man.
I would love to go back. I would like to spend more time in Cuzco. Cuzco was the Rome of the Inca Empire. They called it the navel of the world. The main square in Cuzco is where Tupac Amuru II was drawn and quartered by the Spanish. He was the last Inca king. And they tied each limb to a horse and ripped his body apart in the center of the square. And that is who Tupac Shakur is named after.
Really?
Why would you name your son after someone who was drawn and quartered?
Okay. Sounds a very white thing. Is that his real
name? California.
I know who Tupac is. Party. But like meaning...
His parents were Black Panther radicals. They named him after...
Jesus, how British...
Some of the most British things about you? You're from London?
Well, the accent's pretty. I'm like middle-class Hampstead Jew. So like, to stereotype...
And you like to wear cowboy shirts. I really love it.
Love it.
You're a Jewish guy from London and you got a lot of pearl snap shirts.
I love dressing loudly. I love just all the shirts. I love dressing up. A lot of guys, especially in the UK, they don't like to dress up. I love to dress up. So I got this pink grey suit, got cowboy shirts, got floral. I just love it. And especially for the stage, love dressing up. That's a fantastic excuse. Because you see a lot of people, comics, they walk on and they dress like shit.
Yeah.
Unless it's their style or whatever. You could still dress on like jeans, like a shirt, whatever. Yeah, you could still look good. But you see some people just roll on. You're like... Already the audience think you look like a fucking drag.
Yeah, it's almost... Well, it seems that that's been the style in the States for like 10 years now. It's kind of like, I don't care enough to put...
I'm just the guy that...
But the thing, I don't know, you get to a certain age in that, and I call it the... it's the eternal boy of America. You see, like, guys in their 50s, and they're still dressing like boys. Wearing like a Puma shirt, like with a big logo on it.
Unless that's your style, like
but there comes a
Louis C.K. because he's being like the fat old, you know, just like don't give a fuck anymore. That works because that is a character based on.
But can't some of us give a fuck?
Absolutely, absolutely. Like Noel, the calf, right?
Oh, I love Noel.
So he really is like when I was 18, started there. He was just like, you know, I'll take you around with me. Don't worry. You know, he's one of the guys. You know. And he keeps saying about the show.
I love him. He's an older guy and he dresses with incredible style.
Great.
Impeccable style.
He says he's actually banned comics from playing his venue because they look like shit.
Wow.
They've actually, this comic's like, done great. Bah, bah, bah. Thank you very much. Thank you, London, right? Done great. Goes up to Naga. So what did you think, man? Can we get a new book? He goes, no, you're dressed like a fucking asshole. You know, get the fuck out of my face. By the way, he's got a point. Noel's kind of got a point. But you should dress. You're in front of people. And when I dress, I feel, maybe it's just in my head, that when you walk on, people go, oh, you're dressed well. Okay, you've made an effort.
Or that this guy must be doing okay. He can afford.
Well, I mean, obviously they don't know that. Bless the act term.
Now, you started at the Comedy Cafe with Noel Faulkner.
Yes.
Who's been a guest on this program. I love your Noel Faulkner impression.
I loved your podcast, Noel, and that is exactly what's like hanging out with Noel. I started where, it's the same thing with you, man. You started at what, same age?
17.
17, kids. I started at 18, so just kids, boys. What do we know? Nothing. And just in an adult world. And I found that amazing. You just, like, go to the cafe. And they were like the one club that, you know, we all have those people that really can like go, all right, there's something there, mate. We'll work with you and just whatever, just, you know. And I've always had that as a home, and I'm really good friends with Noel, and he's just like been rocking and rolling for like, 40 years. I mean, he knows every trick.
So much comedy history.
So much. Everyone knows him. He knows every trick in the book, all the rest. And he's just a great mentor, great friend, great guy just to...
What are some of the greatest coaching... he's given you, what's some of the greatest advice he's given you?
Dress well.
Yeah.
He's like...
That's a good mentor.
No, but it is. Dress well.
How old is he? He's in his 60s?
Like, I don't know, 60. Yeah.
He fucking looks like he fell out of GQ magazine.
He would always love to hear that.
And the fedoras.
I know, it's great.
I mean, but I mean, like, not like, you know, found at a fucking thrift store fedora. I mean, an actual, you know, proper bought fedora.
He's given me so much amazing advice. He's like, when I was like a kid, and you know, when you're that age, you're like, running around. And all these, like, other comics are like, first off, I don't know if you experienced this when you're young. Who's this kid? What do you know about comedy? You're a child. Did you get that? When these older comics like, whatever. Who are you? And you're like, fuck you. We're all in the same boat. Yes, I may not have that experience like you do.
Those are guys who are threatened by your existence.
Well, I found that.
Who will soon
perish.
Be extinct.
You know what Noel said? The best advice he said to me. And he said, it's always the shit ones who are cunts.
Exactly.
Bang. And he said that.
That's
and
truth.
I was just like, that is so true. And all these,
it's true.
The few handful of people who have been cunts to me, not but just, you know, those people that are just, you meet them and, they're now being cunts. There's no reason for it.
Right.
They're not running anymore, put it that way. They're not doing it anymore.
Right.
And I don't, that sounds a very wanky, like, up myself way. And, you know, I hope that I can go on for another 10 years. But the point is, that was the best. He says, always... the shit ones are the cunts.
And it's always the shit ones who are the cunts.
And that makes sense. And you know what? I've said to me, I've been watching comedy since I was 12. Like, literally, disobeying my parents when I was like 10, watching the stand-up at night when I should be in bed or something to watch stand-up. For some kid, as a
Laughter was forbidden in your house?
Absolutely not. We're a Jewish family. Don't be ridiculous. It goes laughter, then God, then synagogue. It's a very... Half the time we're laughing at the synagogue.
That's great.
Absolutely. So comedy's a thing, you know. And but I learned so much from Noel. And I great thing, I always respect him so much that I started as a kid. I played his room. He now's moved upstairs. So it's all kind of like a bit chilled, a bit nice. It's great. It's a little, but downstairs used to be a real like lion's den...
It was.
Friday,
I did it years
Saturday,
ago. It was
Thursday,
drunks.
Friday, drunks.
Hen nights. I mean, the young drunks. Young, trendy drunks.
Yeah.
The
from
wanker.
Essex. From Essex.
Wanker types
they
that come
know.
Into London for the weekend and stuff.
They think they're dressed well, but they're not.
I remember, man. That was. I always enjoyed the old room.
It was great. You either loved... Some comics hated it.
Yeah.
Like, some comics didn't like. Like, Rituals said, like, he fucking hated it, apparently. I mean, I loved it. Because, you know, it's just like, it was live, it was there, you know. And as a kid, I was 22 and I was comparing the whole time. People thought I had a residency there. I didn't. But basically, like, and I was like, right, can you do these days to fill in, do everything? As a kid, I was thrown in with adults as a 21 and I'm comparing. I'm taking the piss out of them. I'm controlling a room of 250 drunk, coked up Essex London. Cunts.
You are a lion tamer.
And it was weird, but why I respect Noel and I'm so appreciative to Noel that I learned the hard way. I was thrown in, like, you know, in the lines.
Yeah,
then,
totally.
And you fight your way out of right. corners. Like boxing, like bang, turn Jesus, them.
You should have jab. Seen some of these like biker bars I did in Daytona and then Southern circuits. I mean, and oh my God, they were drunk, lots of heckling. I mean, you really learn how to think on your toes.
You have to.
That you can handle any situation.
You have to. That's it. Because you have to do it. You either fight, it's that fight or flight thing. And I'm so happy I went through that experience. So now I'm so happy, like, compare or improving or just whatever. Just, you know, or some dickish heckle. I'm like, right, let's fucking rock and roll, you dick. And especially now I'm like 27, so I'm now like a young man. But then as a kid,
right,
I had this horrible thing for years that like, oh, fuck, like that everyone knows that I'm just a child. Yeah, I'm 22. What do I know?
Of course.
I had this horrible thing. So I really had to just step up and just learn. And that's why I always appreciate now. And he's a constant friend and constant support. And
wonderful. I love the new room that they've moved upstairs to. It's perfect comedy room.
But it doesn't have that, like...
The more pugilistic, yeah. You know, you got to fight for
club.
Half your set
yeah.
with some moron. But why are you a comedian?
I always wanted to do it since I was 12 years old. I come from a very funny family. My dad, my grandpa, my two brothers. It's hilarious. I wish I could be funny like them. Things they're not trying, you know, they're not trying to say, they won't say something going, oh, I'll write that down for next time.
Right.
They're just funny, funny, funny people. I'm always just crying with laughter. So we come from a family, funny family. For some reason, I don't know why, I've always wanted to do stand-up since I was a child. I'd always watch TV. Always this TV, like stand-up on TV, like Jonglers, or like they had a program like 15 years ago or something, or like The World Stands Up, or you know. All these...
I did that one.
Yeah. So I hear all these, and for some reason, I'd always watch it, and I just got obsessed. Obsessed. For some reason, it's this weird thing. Just... And I know exactly the moment when I was 12 years old, I was in my pajamas watching Lee Evans do stand-up, his Scotland one, his DVD. I remember just screaming my fucking tits off, crying. My dad was going, would you shut up? I'm trying to fucking listen. He's getting annoyed with me. He's trying to watch the comedy. I can't stop laughing. That penny dropped so hard going, this is what I'm going to do. That's it. So since I was 12 to 18 when I first started, 18, you're a boy. That year's like going out as a teenager, getting shit faced on Saturday, and my mates getting stoned, wankered, pissed, blah 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 blah, blah whatever. There's always been that burning desire was in me going Saturday night. Everyone's passing a joint around, everyone's just getting pissed and just trying to fucking touch some woman. I know I could be doing something now. And when I was 18, I did the courage, I went there, I saw my first live comedian, Nick Wilty, he took the piss out of me. Because I went to the front row, what do I know, right? And I still tell him to this day, it's the first live comic I ever saw. And I did my first gig around the corner like a week later, it was 5 minutes. And I remember whatever I was doing, I had a few glasses of wine, it was six people above a pub who couldn't give a shit who I was. And like, the weight I felt after doing it, it's just the weight off my shoulders. Like, I've waited since I was 12 to do this. And I remember the first thought came off going, was that it? You've been waiting that long just to do that? I'm not saying I have no idea what I was saying. It's obviously awful. But just going on, that's why I say to comics who want to, people that want
to start.
It
wasn't as bad as the fear that you had associated.
No, because everyone has that. Like they say to me, oh, I want to start stand-up. Well, go on, this is my advice, and just say hello.
Well, it's like before you have sex, you know, it seems like an absolutely terrifying prospect. And then the first time and you do it and you don't know what to do and you know you're putting you.
But at the end of the day, the goal is you're going to get some more bookings out of it. Depends who, you know, I don't know how much you'd be fucked in show business, but damn. So that
but
is
we, but you and I became friends last year. I'm glad you enjoyed my show and you enjoyed.
Glad we are friends.
And I've spent a lot of time with you this visit to London, which has been great. And you did your little Camden Town. I don't say little. Sorry,
yes.
You're. Camden Head pub gig, which was...
My little shithole gig.
A charming room. American
are you right now? Something so wackety-schwackety. It's a little pub above a room. I'm being very British.
Yeah.
It is what it is.
Yeah.
You know, it's actually, I'll put myself down here. It's a pub above a room. great little like a venue. It's been so many comedy shows always going on, like the Camden Fringe.
But you had so many cool friends there that I met afterwards, like Natalia Tena. Yeah, the Molotov Jukebox, and you had a lot of cool people that you had met in Peru. These English girls were at the show.
Yeah, they were actually.
And so I talked to them about Peru. One of my favorite topics is Peru.
Amazing.
So I mean, you have my eternal respect because you've been to Peru.
Thank you, sir.
And that you filmed mocking my. My Tom Rhodes literally Radio theme song at Machu Picchu. That's so cool. That
as
you
I did that. It's on YouTube. I was literally probably had a shit in my pants. I was doing
So we spent a lot of time together this visit, and you know, you're talking about your dad. Your dad seems hilarious. Like you say, you got two older brothers that are funny.
Absolutely.
Your dad seems hilarious. That's what I was going to say at that Camden Head Pub. We were outside, and there's a homeless guy coming. And you said, see that guy? I knew him when he had nothing.
Yeah. That's
and
my.
You said that was like one of your dad's old
That's guys. My dad. My dad. Well, I think why I became comic, because he'd always, we'd be going out on the weekend after school. He would say to me, have you heard joke 312? Like, what are you talking about?
He's got it numbered like Foghorn Leghorn had numbered his feathers.
Joke 312, you've never heard that? I'm like, no, I've never heard that. You sure you haven't heard that? But dad, you say this every week. Let me tell you, joke 312. You should hear joke 314. Oh, that's great. But let me tell you a bit of that. So literally, like Kirby Enthusiasm.
Well, like that old joke. I love that. The you know that old joke about these guys are in prison and they've all heard each other's jokes 1,000 times. So they have their jokes numbered. And like, so they're all in prison. And like, no, like everybody's lying in bed at night and somebody will yell out, 64. And then they'll all start laughing because they know the joke. And then there's this new guy gets sent to the prison and he's hearing people yelling out the numbers and everybody's laughing. And he goes, okay, I want to do one. I want to do one. And the guy yells out, 82. And nobody laughs. And his prison bunk mate goes, yes, some people, you know, it's all about the timing. Some people don't have timing.
Right. My dad.
So your dad numbered the jokes.
That's my dad was like, let me tell you, 43. That's not to be confused with 102.
What were some of your dad's funniest expressions?
Oh, easy. My dad, well, I've learnt Yiddish through my dad. My dad, if he was annoyed with you, he'd talk to you in the third person. Or he still does. My dad does. My grandfather's no longer with us. But they still talk to you in the third person. Like, if you're, like, always, like, growing up, I love to cook. And you've come over and I'm cooking for you. I love cooking. And it's such a passionate thing of mine. But I'm cooking. He's trying to cook. If I was in his way, right, or if he was him, he would always say to me, he's here. He's here. Busy kite with him. He's here. We're on the fucking way. I'm trying to cook. He's here. He's here. Basically, he's here. He's basically talking to someone else. He's here. Look, he's here. He's all over the place.
My dad would do this thing. He would say, your boy. Hey, I saw your boy the other day. And it'd be someone who totally wasn't my boy.
No.
Just like to needle me.
The third person is just hilarious. He's a busy kite with... you know what? I like speaking to... I'm not religious. I just use it for show business reasons, right? Black and gay. That's my next thing. And then I'm Hollywood all over, right?
Black and gay?
Black and gay. Jewish?
Yeah.
Now I just need to be black and gay and that's Hollywood, no?
Those are the funniest people.
Well, there we go. I just need to be black and gay, so...
Yeah.
I
think those are the three funniest people on the planet.
Well, it does come from that whole thing, like the stigma of being, you know, suppressed or that. You know, I think that's true. I don't know. I just know that I come from a funny family, you know.
Dealing with adversity through humour.
Yeah.
Or well, laughing actually, in the face of adversity.
How personally I deal with shit. Like, through humour. I'm too sensitive. That's why I'm always, people saying, oh, Joe, stop telling jokes on situations. My non-comic friends. But I go, I can't, because if I don't say anything, I'm going to cry. Like, when my friend's a fucking crack addict, my oldest friend, oh, great. So already I'm making jokes about can't use spoons at his house. It's a nightmare. My other friend's going, how dare you say anything like that? I go, Andrew, I'm going to fucking cry. Like, so, but through that, like, I think that's a comic thing. Comics use that protection jokes. Because, you know, I don't want to fucking cry. And one of my things that about leading on from that is when I go to Amsterdam, I've been to Amsterdam, I went there last year, right? Because I've got the joke about this and I'm so happy using humour to sort out your issues, right? I bought my girl, I won't tell the joke, it's so wackity-schmackity, but I the story, I bought my girlfriend birthday holiday then. She basically dumped me a week before. Absolute heartbreaking. Heartbreaking. I felt sick. I was on the plane with tears and just absolutely just horrible people like wondering, what the are you scared of flying? Someone said to me. Like, you know, that real. And I played along going, yes, but I'd like snot come down like everything. And it's just kind of amazing that you can, now I'm so happy I found a joke for it. And that it's such a therapeutic, you know, I went through such a horrible experience. Like just being on my ex-girlfriend's now birthday holiday in this pimp hotel that I booked everything by myself. I mean, that is, you know.
This is in Amsterdam.
Yeah.
6 months ago, I bought my girlfriend, right? Check this. I bought my girlfriend a birthday holiday to Amsterdam. She'd never been before, right? And flights, hotel included. Like, for her birthday, right? A week before she dumped me. Now, I don't know if you've ever been in this particular pickle of pain. All I'm saying is when I got to the reception desk in Amsterdam, I approached and went, hello, Mr. Wilson, to check in. And the concierge went, okay. Were we expecting Mr. Woodward? And I was like, well, we were, but she kind of, you know. And this is why I love the Dutch, ladies and gentlemen. Because then he pulled out a map of Amsterdam, started marking places around Amsterdam, right? I was in a lot of pain. I'm like, what, are they museums? What, no, whorehouses, get fucked up, my friend. Stop crying, please. I heard about you crying on the fucking EasyJet over. Jesus Christ. People thought you were a bomber.
But, you know, other things that I'm trying, I want to get onto, that I'm trying to, because the whole thing with Stan is going, oh, try and find the truth in things. It was the truth. Being a comedian, you've got to find truth. Bill Hicks, Lenny Bruce,
right.
Pryor, yeah, they got right, and they're all fucking wicked comics, all the rest, right? But, and I'm trying to do that with my stuff, but it's just some, like, this is the big, like, as a kid, I got touched up as a kid, right?
What do you mean touched up?
Touched up by this older guy who touched me up, right?
Well, you pull on your willy?
Yeah. He never, like...
He didn't put his mouth or anything, did he?
No. But okay. It was, like, groping, it was touching, it was, right. Even as, like, a 5-6-year-old, I was like...
Yeah.
Is this right? I don't know.
Yeah.
So, but the point is, that's always been a constant, like... And the fuck is dead now, which I'm very pleased about. But the point is, I'm just trying to find... What, for years I've been trying to work this. What is the joke for that? Now, isn't that fucked up? I'm trying to find a joke for a sort of very traumatic experience. Yes, absolutely. I'm fully aware of that. But like, maybe I've tried different ways to say that to audiences, and audiences are like, whoa, what do you mean you touch?
Yeah.
Maybe I don't have
one of the most horrendous.
Yeah, absolutely.
Topics.
I'm trying to find, I've done, so, one day I'll get it. Like the Amsterdam story.
Yeah, child molestation, you got to be a real master to... Even
to be a molester.
To attempt to talk about it. This friend of mine, Sean Rouse, he was molested fully as a kid.
Right.
And he still talks about it on stage, but he used to do this very funny recalling of the incident.
Yeah.
And I remember watching him going, fuck, this happened to the guy. You couldn't make that up.
And absolutely.
You could not make up the details of it. And it's horrendous, but... I mean, it's a tricky topic.
Absolutely, especially for audiences. Because I've got over it in a sense that I'm now trying to write jokes for it as maybe a protection thing or just to get it out of my system, like the Amsterdam, that girlfriend story, which isn't as on the level of fucked upness.
Right, but some things we talked about, some things will be funny many years from now. Like a couple stories I'm telling on stage now, I told you it took me years. I was too ashamed to talk about them.
Yeah.
It took me 10, 20 years before... shit in the bed in Hong Kong, and then the getting felt up when I was 19 story, which we won't mention the person's name.
Okay.
Famous comedian.
But they can go to YouTube, right?
Yeah, of course.
Tom Rose.
It's easy to find out.
/
But anyway, sometimes traumatic events take a long time
absolutely.
Before they're funny.
And I'm trying
before you see the funny in it.
That's probably it. I'm probably going around the fields. You know, I haven't. I'm trying to find that, but you know, it's, but that's what I'm trying to do. I've been going nearly 9 years, still new, still trying to find I think I've found my chops. I'm getting there, you know, that whole 10-year mark. I agree with that, but it's just trying to open up, really get in there. And maybe I haven't found the right joke for the audience or the right setup for the audience to go, cool. You know.
But you have the distinction on this podcast of being the first comedian to be a guest of mine that I have not seen his act. You told me...
Some might say that's
you told me you do impressions.
Yes.
So at what point are you going to do... Like, okay, this is Sean Connery reenacting me getting molested as a kid. And then like...
Motherfucker, that actually is, isn't
you
it?
You tell the story.
Shit! That's the... That cunt. He's actually found it. That's it. That's actually it, isn't
you,
it?
You do Sean Connery's voice telling the story of being molested.
Oh, you just fucking done it, haven't you? I've been searching for years, trying to really just see. And he goes, why don't you? Blah, 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 blah. So wackety schwackety. Damn, all right. Fuck.
Okay. So,
so yeah, that's brilliant. But I do impressions, yeah.
They said to me, Jojo, what is your best impression? I go, well, I don't know. Maybe it's Elmo from Sesame Street. Hey, how are you? Yeah, you want to play with Elmo? Yeah, okay. Or maybe it's Arnold Schwarzenegger. Hey, how are you? Come here and give these some people some ear. Actually, my best impression is of actually my mum when my dad's been drinking. Philip, stop hitting me!
Unique and seldomly performed craft anymore. You rarely see guys do impressions.
You know
anymore.
Why? I've got this huge thing, and I'm
Sean Connery's probably the one that's done probably too much.
It's like Di Niro,
the way Jack Nicholson was done in the 80s.
With impressions, I love the, I hate this word, but art. The art of impressions, right? It's quite a, I don't want to summon fucking hoo-ha here. It's quite a talent. In a, I'm being so British about this, but fuck it, I'm going to be American. It's a talent. It's a great talent to really mimic someone.
Man, if you can do Noel Faulkner, you can
I love that. I've done it to his face. But okay, for him, for example, or you, or whoever, you both know you have a lot of physical thing. You pout, right? Do a lot of, right? A lot of pouting. But I love impersonating. I love that whole process because then you have to think. You have to break someone's voice down. People, you're so right. People going, oh, you do impressions. Oh, you're a magician. Oh, fuck off. Yes, there's a lot of hack kind of thing. I know impressions. And I cringe at the back going, why are you doing so crap? And I try so hard. Probably doing the harder way to really fit a voice. Right? You've got the voice. You've got the impression. You've got it down. You've worked hours on this talking to yourself in front of a mirror. But what is the joke? It's so crap going, hey, imagine if George Bush was a child catcher. Or imagine if George Bush was a, ugh,
right.
God.
Yeah.
How many times
right.
has that been done? So it's like trying to, how, imagine if George Bush, or whatever, for example, what is the joke? And I think some, it's quite hard. You're trying to write a joke for the character that people can then believe. Not just doing, imagine if. Because it's such an easy hack, impressionist thing to do. I know that I'd triple my income if I did all that bollocks, wackity schmackity. But I've just got sort of appreciations for the voice, just the voice and the art of it, and I love it. And I just, it's great. And I know it's people think because I do it. I've had a lot of comments back going, "Oh, it's very easy. You just do impressions."
Right? Have you ever actually timed it on your watch when you tell another comedian that you're an impressionist about how quickly they get away from you? No, because some comedians are ruthless pricks. They look down on props, impressions. I mean,
well, that's all.
So, what kind
thing.
Of impressions do you do? So you don't do the standard what we would call
no,
hack ones.
No, I
mean, and if you were in it, like the way people think have the stereotype of women not being funny because a lot of women will talk about shopping or their period and how much men suck. So if you were a female comedian, you'd be smart to stay away from those three topics.
Sorry, I said bollocks, meaning I agree that people say, oh, women aren't funny. That whole argument's absolutely bollocks.
Well,
women, of course.
Meaning bullshit. We say bullshit, you say bollocks.
It's just that whole just that fucking nonsense media shit. Women
right.
are as funny as men. Done. You know. But yeah, absolutely. But it's... Dean, that oh, you do impression. Oh, you do a scar. No, I don't think it's true. It's a bit of a it's an appreciation for people.
What are some of your favorites? I want to hear one.
Okay, like for example, Michael McIntyre. Well, in Europe, he's like the biggest comedian. Okay?
Yeah, of course.
But I mean, I've spoken to Michael, and it's a weird as you can hear when you speak to someone, Like, for example, you have a tick, or there's something, especially with Michael, there's a tick, okay? He doesn't sound like a normal person. So I'm like, right, he sounds interesting. Like, for example, you. How would I break down your voice? Now, I know I don't have a baritone, smoky voice, so I'll never get there. I know that. But you, for example, if I was analysing you, which I have done for that Machu Picchu thing, I was like, okay, he's got this. Okay, I'll go, voice, what does it sound like? How do I anchor it onto other characters? Okay, so I'm actually now going to... This, by the way, for me, this is the first time I'm breaking down someone's voice in front of them.
Great.
Let's hide all the glass from Tom before he kicks up.
No, this is great.
Right, so...
You can do a Tom Rhodes impression.
Well, I think it's not bassy enough. I don't have the...
Right.
But it's very scratchy. And the way you talk, you go up, and then you go down again. And then you pout. Your whole... You pout. But I've broken it down. It's very interesting watching comedy.
Hand me that bottle.
Because I need another drink. Oh, you meant that. But it's great. I love impersonating it. And it's just like, you could just feel them. And whenever I'm impersonating someone on stage, I always think about, I think of them. So for example, can I be honest? I'm going to be honest with you. I haven't told this before. When I was really I really fixate on comics sometimes. Over the years, I go, I've loved him. I've watched everything of him. You, when I got into you, met you, I've watched everything. It's just a fixation and you know, I'll go on, right? So I've watched every nonsense video that, right? There was a joke I do about Amsterdam where I got bored of doing it. So I was like, you know what? I'm bored of it. How can I change this up? Amsterdam, I'm listening to Tom Rhodes. I actually did with my voice. So I was in Amsterdam, whatever my setup voice is, this is the setup voice, blah, blah, blah. But I changed to your. So I was doing it. I was in Amsterdam. I thought the crime was better than the UK. I was in Amsterdam. So suddenly I just switched to doing the setup of your voice, and then I'd do a Dutch voice, and that was it.
And it becomes 1,000 times funnier.
I never said it was funny. Right? It's more of a filler, that joke, I'm going to be honest. But yeah, so I was actually for a few months fucking around because I was probably bored out of my head about this doing joke. I changed it to make myself laugh. I would never say, so Tom Rhodes, I've never met your name. But suddenly I go, I was in Amsterdam. I know, blah, 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 blah. And so yeah, I was doing that for a few months. And sometimes I do that just to entertain myself. That's a weird appreciate to you because you're Amsterdam based, or was, you were.
Yeah.
And I don't know. But I just love doing impressions, and people do look down on it. And you know what? They look down and go, no, it's rubbish. But it's like, you don't know what you're talking about.
Right.
You don't know what you're talking about. You're looking at 80s shitty fucking...
But I like that you're so passionate. I'm so passionate with it. That you didn't...
Absolutely. Fuck them.
You didn't capitulate when you discovered this attitude from other comedians.
You know, when I started out, we're same age. I started out as this attitude of, you're young. Well, you're a kid, mate. I think... maybe
there's a benefit to that because you're not locked into anything.
Exactly. So I've had that shit.
You can do anything. And I always say, you know, hit them with everything but the kitchen sink. I mean, you know, fucking one-liners, stories. I mean, absolutely. You know, whatever you can do.
But so many people are like, so this is not like industry people. Oh, impressions. And I'm like, actually, don't know what you're talking about. Trust me, I can run you through if it's what I'm trying to do. This new, different to really crappy, hacky nonsense. And people don't know enough about it. That's what I feel. And it's a shame, because I think it's a great thing. Yeah. It's a great impression. Because it's just like you're actually becoming someone. I've taken time to really think intensely about someone. And I speak to other impressionists who aren't fucking wackity-schmackity-hacky. And it's just a tough. You're fighting against... I don't know. I think it's great.
There's no one else in London doing it, right?
On the circuit, no. Terry Alderton a bit, but Terry... Who's another, just a great
love Terry,
mate.
Cyclone. And I love his...
He's just another...
Style was completely different 10, 15 years ago.
Absolutely, he's
he
changed the whole
He turned into this
shit.
Energetic cyclone. I love him. Changed. I mean, he was funny back then as a monologist.
Nice. Yeah.
But he just, like, jacked up the
rocket
fuel.
We just changed
the
ship, because apparently he said, he crashed, you know, mentally. Well, he just changed everything up. He's been great with impressions. We talk about impressions. Now, Stefano... Paolini, right? He's another... He stopped doing impressions. more. He's more character accents. And I do a lot of, by the way, impressions and accents, but I try and use it like accents within a joke. Anyway, he's great. He has to be shouted out because I started doing voiceover through him. And so impressions land well with doing
voiceover. I would love to do voiceover.
You have the voice for voiceover.
Jesus, I would love
it. Why don't you get in contact?
I don't know. Hey.
What is the greatest advice you've ever been given as a comedian?
I don't know. I can't think offhand the great advice. I mean, I've given so much from these people that have just looked after me. And I think maybe the greatest thing I've seen coming to memory now is when I was like my 9th gig in, right, doing an open spot at a professional club, way beyond my station. I had no idea what I was doing. But I saw Sean Mio. Sean Mio is one of these dudes who's been going rock and roll. He's done Just for Laughs. He's done everything.
Known him for years. Love him.
Brilliant comic. I saw him, and what I saw was that every word he said was a setup for a punchline. There was no bullshit, no fat, no, everything was a setup for a punchline. And since this day, I've really tried to get that in my head. Even if I'm improving, the line, talking to a crowd, that line, that's a setup. They're going to say something, whatever. Here's the punchline. But you know, so I would say that is the best thing, and maybe advice or thing I've seen. And also, the ones who are cunts, if you're shit, the ones who are shit are cunts. Norfolk.
Are women in Colombia as hot as everyone says?
Oh my God. I love those brown, beautiful babies. Wow.
You like dark-skinned women. I like that about
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. Yeah. I've got a very... Well, actually, I shouldn't say this lie. I like all women, Tom.
Yeah.
I think they're all beautiful in every different way. And absolutely. I'm not a dick. I'm going to be...
Yeah.
But everyone did say, yeah, but wait till you go to Colombia. And Colombia has this horrible stereotype. Oh, Colombia's, Medellin, Escobar, the drugs. It's absolute nonsense. It's absolute nonsense. And they're such passionate people. They want to show all the gringos that how much love they have. And I had the best time and I can't wait to go back there. But yes, the Colombian women are fucking banging. And I got to know a few.
I would love to see the smirk on your face getting adored by luscious, shapely, curvaceous Latin women in Colombia.
But unfortunately, like, you should never go
to Colombia. You blush really nice. You're really adorable when you blush.
Thank you.
Yeah. That's right. One of your...
You sound like the Spanish gardener that touched me up.
The what?
Is it the Spanish gardener that used to touch me up? Sound very similar. I think he said something like that. Difference
right
is,
before he felt
difference
you.
Difference is, he was touching me. You're not.
What is the most London thing about you?
Oh, I don't know. I suppose it's appreciation. When I went to Bristol to do filmmaking, I do film, like, learn how to do filmmaking. So cutting out all that producers who don't know what the fuck they're talking about. I think all the comics and you who listen to this know exactly what I'm talking about. When I was there, I realised it's not in London. It is so... Just different cultures, like languages, colours. Like, the world is in London. And when I went to Bristol, it was like, oh, wait, it's more white? There's loads of colours and languages there? Of course, different type. But, you know, it's very interesting. You know, that is the most thing, London. When you live in London, you grow up with this. Everyone is, you know, who can I go for a pint with? That's the thing. It's not, if you go to other places, not saying Bristol's like this, other places, it was like, you're a different colour. Here, for example, in the West, really westernised worlds, where we don't really give a shit who... It's like, can I have a drink with you? Yes or no? That was to say, that's the most London thing, appreciating this, like, just cauldron of colour and ethnicity and cultures and languages. And it's great. You walk down the street in London, as I was telling people, like, South America, you hear, like, 5 different languages going on. I was at a party once, a few months ago. I was the only British person there. All Italian and Spanish and, you know.
Because all the jobs are here.
Hey, yeah.
No, that's great. We've met so many Italian people since we've been here.
But London, you have everyone here. And
you're right. I love London for that.
Everyone's here.
So what's your favorite spot in London? For anyone who's listening to this, you could... I like that Garlic and Shots place you took.
Oh my God,
to.
Yes.
What's the proper name of it?
Garlic and Shots.
But no, no, no. It's called, there's like a family name.
No, it's called Garlic and Shots.
It's called Garlic
That's
and Shots.
Rest. Okay.
It's on Greek Street.
I took you guys when I, yes. Mm. No, Frith Street. Okay. F-R-I-T-H. I took you guys when I met you. I was like, I love taking people to Garlic and Shots. Because it's really, it's this, you're going to, every time I go there,
dark
it's hard to find.
Dark basement watering
it's
hole.
It's just dirty and like Metallica going, yeah, ooh, yeah. And like candles and yeah. Really horrible. But it's not horrible, it's great. You'd go down this little like Fritzl, Joseph Fritzl basement. If you don't know who Joseph Fritzl is, Americans, which I know you don't, Google him and you go, motherfucker Jesus, Joseph Fritzl. Anyway, it's a dungeon. It's horrible. It's,
why did you have to single out Americans? I've got Israelis and Peruvians and Canadians and
no, because they'll know. I spent a lot of time with Americans. Like, I don't know anything about Joseph who?
Okay.
Stalin?
All right.
No, Joseph Fritzl.
Okay.
But I'm not saying that to the obviously.
That was one of my favorite new discoveries, the Garlic and Shots that you took me.
It was fantastic.
And we've spent a lot of time.
I've loved
this
it.
Visit. Anyway. It's been wonderful. What is the most Jewish characteristic you see in me?
He's here. Listen. Busy kite. He wants to know. This Gentile wants to know. Listen. There we go.
Because you've been teasing me about it.
Absolutely. You are... You're very wackity-schmackity. You love this. I've had a go at you for being... You know, when you like so...
Because I'll like, kind of dip in a little something I need or request, a favor.
This is a very... What you asked me before about my old man.
Yeah.
What's the word? Jewish. This is what I got from him. You are... This... Let me... Okay. This is the difference why you always say, because I've listened to podcasts, that, hey, I should have been Jewish.
Yeah.
This is why... This is how maybe I can improve your Jewishism. You're a Gentile, right?
Yeah.
You got that. Basically, you got a jawline. You're Gentile, okay?
Yeah.
So, right. I think you ask questions because you're actually interested. You want to know.
Yeah.
And you want to have a discussion about this. Okay. That's the Gentile one. You know what the Jew is? The Jew is when they're interested, you know, they're interested. Basically, how do you get that? You're a question going, so, Joe, how did you find Peru? That's a lovely question. There we go.
And then a conversation starts.
There we go. Because you're interested. This is like my old man asking. Yeah. What? So, tell me. Peru, huh? Well, tell me more. How? Because they want to get something out of it. Tell me, that's why if you talk to a Jewish comic before, next, go, so, just do that for. Okay. Like, all right, he's one of those. He's trying to get something.
So what did your dad ask you? What, like, did you get any good bargains in Peru? What?
When I was...
What, yeah. What was the point of that? Well, how different was it? Just because he goes, so,
No, because the point is, you want to know. He wants to know for financial or other business reasons.
Okay.
He's trying to get something out of you. You just want to get a lovely question out of me.
Answer. Or hear about the beautiful things you saw.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, yeah, beautiful things. Tell me. Seriously. Well, how can we get into business? You know, one of those. He's a... But yeah. One of the favourite Jewish moments was when I went. My dad took me to see Jackie Mason when I was about 13, right?
Oh, yeah.
He was in London, right? So he insisted. Actually, I've learned to dress. Because my dad used to be a tailor, another Jewish stereotype.
Oh, my God. That's fantastic.
Yeah. I still got... Yeah.
So you grew up with, like, pimp, tailor-made suits and
my
stuff.
Dad would... It's like I was, like, the girl of the family.
Why don't you
like,
design cowboy shirts and have your dad make them?
I was, like, the girl of the family. When I walk out, I go, right, stop that. What are you wearing? Go upstairs and change. How dare you wear the... So I actually learned a lot.
Cool. Through.
So, and then he was a sailor. He was a hairdresser on a sailing ship and he's from Brighton. Basically, Brighton is San Francisco. You know. So, point is, he took me to... Anyway, took me to wheel suit and boot to go to Jackie Mason. And my dad's... Well, before the curtains and before it starts, dad says, So Jackie Mason, he's at the theatre. Yes, Dad. About 2,000 people here. Let's just call it 2,000. All right. How much do you think he's earning here? And he did the maths. He actually had a calculator.
So before the show, your dad's sitting there breaking down like what
absolutely.
The potential
he's
earnings
breaking
of
down.
Jackie Mason.
What is this front wheel
that is,
earning?
That is at,
front
a,
wheel
at
Jew,
a Jackie Mason
front wheel,
show.
Front wheel yid. Front wheel.
That is one of the most Jewish moments I've ever.
And you know what was amazing? 20 minutes later, Jack Mason's like, there's Gentiles in here, they're loving money. There's Jews in here going, how much is this guy making?
That's hilarious. And Jackie Mason did that joke?
Word for fucking word. Looked to my dad and went, oh, you know.
That's hilarious.
He actually worked out roughly how much he's making. So the agent takes 15%. I mean, like, how much percent?
How old were you and what do you remember of Jackie Mason's performance?
I was 13. I think he was the first live comic I saw. Then Nick Wilty in a proper comedy club. Thank you. I don't remember what I saw. I used to listen to
it. It must have changed your life to a degree. I mean, I loved Jackie Mason.
I was there watching just a small
guy. And that's the way he talked. And his delivery was kind of like that. And he did the thing with his hands. And you know, the way he did, he had this...
And that's a very Catskills boy, I tell you.
Rhythm.
Rodney Dangerfield, as we've been talking about.
That was one of my last questions for you is...
love that shtick.
We bonded on Rodney Dangerfield. And we were at Garlic and Shots. I stopped drinking. I'm having a 7-Up and you're having these...
Fun with your wife.
You and my wife are doing these Bloody Mary vodka shots that look delicious. And we're talking about Rodney Dangerfield and how much we loved Rodney Dangerfield.
Love Dangerfield.
And then you find a red tie under your chair. It was like the ghost of Rodney Dangerfield was in Garlic
that
and
was
Shots.
That's fucking weird.
And hey, or like the ghost of comedy.
Yes.
Just put this red tie underneath your chair.
Let me tell you something. I actually still got the tie upstairs.
Yeah.
And this is how maybe we should have done this, but I thought about this, then I thought, oh, don't be ridiculous, Joe. Don't be a fucking idiot, right? I was going to actually, for this, just wear the tie. Put this into
that
you.
Was like a...
But that's too
the
much.
Comedian Excalibur moment of pulling the sword out of the rock.
I remember just jumping up going, yes! Like, way too loud. I was just so excited because I knew there's some kind of stars. He's amazing. I
found a red tie underneath your chair when we're talking about Rodney Dangerfield. Unbelievable.
That's it. I mean, next time we talk about Richard Pryor, I hope to find that Coke underneath my package.
That's great. We'll just keep talking about comedians and look under our chairs and see what the comedic gods have.
Carrot top. Oh, prop. Yeah, go on.
Joseph, I love you to death.
Thank you.
And I'm glad we spent so much time and really bonded this trip.
So am I.
You're a beautiful man, a good cook, and you're a badass human being. In closing, do you have any words of wisdom or advice that you'd like to give the people of the earth?
Obviously the usual thing is don't be an arsehole to other people.
Don't be a cunt. Rule number one.
But if you really want to ask me, don't fucking leave your fag ends or chewing gum on the fucking pavement or the sidewalk. That's it. Just don't.
Okay.
There we go.
That's good.
It really pisses me off. Just put it in a fucking bin. Throwing on the floor and I have to fucking step in and find on my fucking shoe.
Well,
true. Also, don't touch six-year-olds up. If you do... Wait, you know, and then they, when they find a punchline to it, then that's fine.
Or do it in a Sean Connery voice so the child can turn it into a career.
That's the joke, isn't it? Of such years and you fucking found it.
I love you, Joseph Wilson.
Thank you, Tom.
Respect.